Welcome to episode 500, part two. We recorded this live in front of a sold-out crowd in Brooklyn. And what you are about to hear coming up ahead are questions, Q&A, that we took from the audience live on stage at a comedy club in Brooklyn. Welcome to the Afford Anything podcast. You can afford anything, but not everything. Every choice carries a trade-off. This is a show about optimizing your limited resources, including your money, time, focus, and attention. I'm your host, Paula Pant. I trained in economic reporting at Columbia University, and I am here to help you focus on what matters. Now, what you're about to hear is episode 500, part two. We aired part one just the other day. Have a listen to part one if you haven't heard it yet. What you're about to hear in this episode is part two of episode 500, featuring special guest Brad Barrett, host of the Choose FI podcast. Now, for those of you who may be tuning in for the first time, Choose FI stands for Choose Financial Independence, which is the point at which you have sufficient investments such that work becomes optional. And the thing about FI is the journey to FI, the pursuit of FI, is a path that will improve your life regardless of whether or not you actually reach FI. Or I should say, regardless of how long it takes you to reach it, because a dedicated pursuit over a long enough time span, barring any type of black swan calamity, is likely to lead to FI. In any event, in this upcoming episode, myself and Brad Barrett, the host of the Choose FI podcast, take live audience questions. This is the second part of our special episode 500 two-part series. Enjoy. Let's open it up to you all.
Hello, everyone. So we have an appointment tomorrow at 10 a.m. at the city clerk's office to get married.
Oh, congrats. Woo.
Congratulations.
So this is our bachelorette.
Whoa.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Wow.
So I know we got bachelorette, honeymoon, we got everything. All this.
What a night.
So I was just wondering, you know, between, you know, like you said, 1,000+ episodes, what was the most impactful thing that you've learned since starting the podcast? So like through your journeys, you decided to start the podcast. What really hit you sideways?
It's interesting. We just had an episode talking about getting married and safeguarding yourselves. I'll have to get the exact episode number. It might have been 480 or thereabouts, with a woman named Amy, whose husband actually tragically passed away. And it was such a poignant episode about making sure your loved ones are safeguarded. And I think a lot of us, myself very much included, say, oh, I can put beneficiaries on later, or, oh, it'll be fine if, you know, even if I get hit by a bus, like, it's all going to go to my wife or whatever. Or, oh, I'll wait for that term life insurance, or, oh, I'll wait to get a will. My wife's a CPA. I mean, she's very capable, but as much as I'd like to believe I have everything, you know, I's dotted, T's crossed, and she would be able to pick up and run with it, I don't know if that's actually true. So this particular episode just kind of opened my eyes to bad things can happen, and you need to safeguard your loved ones in whatever way and whatever your situation is. Like, the age old tale with our podcast is you have to take action. I think that if there's one through line of almost 650 episodes of Choose FI, it is you have to get up off the couch and take action. And it's easy to listen to podcasts. It's easy to read books. It's all well and good if you have it, you know, you have this knowledge, but it doesn't mean anything unless you do it. And listen, I am as much to blame as anybody on this. Like, there are times where I have the best intentions and I sometimes just don't do it. So it's overcome that inertia and take action, in essence. So in this particular case, but really in every case. And I think that is what separates our community, I think, from most.
Wow. I had a totally different answer.
Go for it.
Well, I mean, my tongue-in-cheek answer is what I've learned is, if Susie Orman ever calls you, always get on the phone with her.
You might have to tell the story real quick.
Susie Orman was on in, what was that, 2018 or 2019? That was a while back. And my very opening question was, Susie, what do you think of the fire movement? And she said, quote, I hate it, I hate it, I hate it. And then we went from there.
Yeah, that had legs.
But the thing that I've learned as a podcaster, what I love about podcasting as a medium is that you can go long form, you can go deep. And in the age of TikTok, when everything is, you know, 10 seconds and you're on a screen and you're scrolling and it's the age of distraction, there are a lot of people who say, like, we live in the age of TikTok, you need to be quick and you need to be snappy. And I don't believe that for a second. I believe that there is room for long form. There's room for depth. There's room for thoughtfulness. There's room for nuance. And I've stayed really committed to producing long episodes. I mean, in the age of short form content, I think you can really gain the most from an audiobook, from a podcast, from a book, from a long blog post or newsletter.
Yeah, and I think there's something especially intimate about podcasting. Mm-hmm. Also, right? Like, I know I listen to a ton of podcasts and you feel like you know those people, like they're your friends. And there's just something really unique and special about it. And you learn people's little eccentricities and ins and outs. And you learn something like Paula, as evidenced by tonight, is like just such a pro when it comes to asking questions. I mean, she is a true journalist at heart. And like, it's obvious from the first second you meet her, right? It's remarkable. And I think that's what's so special about this medium in particular.
Hi, my name is Delia. I listened to his podcast and I have heard about you many times in the podcast. My question is about guilt, because you mentioned to give ourselves some grace, but personally I feel guilt in the sense like I'm trying to pursue my personal finance journey because I'm from Colombia. I never heard about money and I came here and like, oh my God, I don't have savings and stuff. So I like to travel. I like experiences. So every time like I want to travel, I do it because that's what I love the most. But then I feel guilty because I don't have the emergency fund that I think I need. So my question is, how do you, at the very beginning, you know, when we don't even have like 100K, because after 100K, everything compounds and, you know, it accelerates. In your journey at the beginning, how did you give yourself some grace without like taking care of your personal finance journey, but without feeling guilt for valuing and doing the things that you want to do?
I would say a few things. Number one, and I know that there are a lot of YouTube headlines that are like, the first 100K is the hardest, and after that it gets... But really, things compound with the first dollar. So you're already in the compounding cycle. You're already getting that growth. But to the guilt question, what I would recommend is have a certain amount, whether it's a specific raw dollar amount or a percentage, have a very specific amount that you're like, this is the amount that I'm dedicating towards savings. And whatever that is, do that first. And once you've done that, then in order to be firm about the amount that you're committing to savings, you then also have to be equally firm about the amount that you're committing to spending. You're like, I've committed to spending this money, because only by committing to spending this amount can I be equally as committed to saving this other amount, right? So the strength in the commitment has to be equal on both sides. So if you're really strong in your commitment to save X, then you're equally as strong in your commitment to spend Y.
Yeah, I think often it's these little psychological shifts. And we have to understand we are human and we have an operating system running. And you sometimes have to trick yourself. And that's okay. That's part of being human. So like Paul is saying, if you really parse it, it's a distinction without a difference, but it is a difference and it means everything. So in this case, it's guilt-free spending and you have to be okay with that, right? Like, have you taken action to make your life better? Yes, you're nodding significantly. Yes. Of course you have. Doesn't that feel amazing? Yes. Of course it does. So you have to focus on the positive there. about just how different your life is now. And like Paul is saying, the positive starts compounding from the very first action you take to make your life better. It just does. And compounding has a way of seeming slow at first, and then all of a sudden, boom. And you will see that on your path. But I understand at the beginning, it feels slow. It feels like you want to be there, right? Like you've made up this number, 100K, because you've heard it, right? And I'm not talking negatively about that, but you've heard that number as if it's some magical thing. Is it any different than 99K, 98K, 97? It's just some random round number. And you're beating yourself up because of some random round number. That doesn't make any sense, right? Like your life is dramatically better than before you found Phi. And you should be really, really proud of yourself.
Yes, it's much better. I actually opened my BTSAX phone and like it's minimum 3K. And I was like, I don't have 3K. I will never have like a bump sum 3K. So what I did is like I started saving $100 every month. And then when I had my 3,000, like I was so happy. And I look at my app every day. And like right now I have like 5K. Yeah. And also like I want to live my life and tomorrow is not guaranteed. So even if I have a million, I don't know if I'm gonna leave tomorrow, you know. So yeah, thank you for the podcast. I'm much better today.
My biggest concern is time constraints. So between, you know, two kids, sports, just, you know, working 40 plus hours a week, this is a little embarrassing, but I have not finished your first rental property class, and I got about halfway through it about 3 years ago, and then it just, you know, life becomes overwhelming. Like,
yeah, you're a turtle.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very slow turtle. So how, in the beginning, did you, you know, before you had the fire where, you know, where you had the time, how did you deal with that in the beginning?
A couple of things. One is to just give yourself grace. Like, all right, so you said, hey, this is a little embarrassing, but I haven't finished your first rental property. There's absolutely nothing to be embarrassed about with that at all. The fact that you've enrolled in a course and more broadly, the fact that you've decided that you want to learn about how to invest in rental properties and that that is on your mind, it's something that you're incrementally moving towards, like that is something to be celebrated. You know, rather than the script of like, oh, I'm embarrassed because I haven't finished it yet, flip that to like, hey, I'm excited because I decided that this is something that I want to pursue. And step by step, piece by piece, I am working my way there. I'm gradually moving in that direction. There's direction and then there's acceleration, right? And I think so many people get caught up in rate of acceleration that they don't stop and think about the fact that you're in the right direction for you. And that's the single most important piece of it. So I'd give yourself a lot of grace for that. The whole reason, by the way, that we came up with the framework of a turtle, and so that just so everyone knows, so one of the things that we were dealing with in your first rental property is it's a cohort-based course. And so in theory, you know, you're supposed to kind of go through it as a team. And what we saw is that the people who were moving through it a little bit more slowly were often having a hard time forgiving themselves for that. And so we created this framework where in any healthy ecosystem, there are cheetahs who just like zoom through everything fast. There are wolves who run in a pack. And then there are turtles who move slowly. It's great to be a turtle. Turtles are an important part of the ecosystem. I have a pet turtle. There's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know? Any healthy ecosystem needs turtles. There's mentality and then there's tactics, right? The mentality, I think, is the most important part. And that's the part that I've just been addressing. Then tactically, you can fit it in the margins. But I think the tactics are less important than just, I'm okay with the fact that I'm directionally pointed in the right place and I'm moving step by step to get there. Last thing I'll say is oftentimes the muddled middle feels like the slowest part. And when you get to the end, it actually feels fast in hindsight. So let's just say, for example, that 2 years from now, you buy your first rental property. Let's say 3 years ago is when you started thinking about it. To go from thinking about buying a rental to actually buying one in the span of 5 years is actually really quick. You know, there are a lot of people who take 15, 20 years. They started thinking about it 20 years before they actually made a move, right? 5 years in the span of a human life is actually not that much time if we're lucky, you know? And so even if it takes another 2 years, that's actually relatively quick. So zoom out and think of it like that.
So my question for the two personal finance experts here is, what money mistakes or regrets have you made in the last 12 months?
Oh,
if any.
In the last 12 months is a good twist on that.
That's great.
Oh, wow.
It's funny. I feel like we all have our stock answers to every question. Like, I was going to go on my autopilot. Actually, I've talked about my real estate adventures. Actually, my buddy who I went in on that real estate, when he's literally in the back. So us two poor suckers. Oh, but last 12 months. Okay, I need to think about that.
Wow, last 12. Okay, honestly, it's like just not really paying attention. And that's a mistake. That's a chronic mistake. It's not like a single event. It's just a chronic state of not really paying that much attention. That is still ongoing. If I'm honest, I've kind of tuned out of my finances, and that's not a good thing. Like, I used to be really on top of reading my statements every single month. I used to be really on top of, like, I would manually compile a net worth spreadsheet. And I have all of these apps and, you know, programs and so, like, I've tried every app and I've tried every piece of software, and there are many that I use. But I also do think that there's value to periodically manually updating a spreadsheet. So I used to have this practice where I would physically log into every single account and transcribe it, you know, process that can easily be automated. But there's a like a moving meditation that comes with doing it manually. But it's been years since I've done that. I think I stopped during the pandemic when my, you know, I think all of our brains broke during the pandemic. And Humpty Dumpty is still like putting the pieces back together again, you know, on a month by month basis. I'll like check an app and I'll be like, oh, that's interesting. But like, I'm just not that in it anymore.
There are things that I know that I want to do every year, like that I espouse, and I have a checklist even, but sometimes they just falls by the wayside. So I think, yeah, being less involved, maybe caring a little bit less. And it's not like because I've reached fat FI or something. It's more just apathy on some level. Even going through something simple, like going through my credit card bill and just looking at, are there things that have outlived their usefulness? And like, I would say we should probably all do that once a year at least. Because things have a way of just appearing and not like, oh, I'm paying for Hulu and I haven't watched Hulu in 12 months, right? And not that it's big dollars, but just it's an easy change. And I think those little easy changes, they feel really good when you make those decisions. Or, you know, even something simple like, okay, I think realistically every year we should all look at our insurance policies and get a new quote or something. And like, sometimes it feels like a real hassle to do that even once a year. The real honest answer when it comes to personal finance is you should get your silly little human brain out of it and make it so that you can't really make that many mistakes. Just get your brain out of it. Automate everything so you don't have to think about it. My perfect personal finance life is my silly little reptilian brain to not be involved at all. And therefore, I can't make mistakes. So maybe I've succeeded. I don't know. Like, yeah.
I'd like to take a moment to thank the sponsors who have allowed my team and I to bring you 500 episodes and counting at no cost to you. Please join me in supporting this show by supporting our sponsors. When it comes to financial advice, you've got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I didn't know how to optimize what was in my wallet, so I didn't know how to optimize how to use travel rewards to pay for vacations. But now I've got a new card with more miles, and I'm getting business class upgrades, I'm getting lounge access, I'm getting all kinds of perks that I didn't even know that I was missing out on. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval, and terms of each credit card issuer apply. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search, it's to match. And you can do that with Indeed. Indeed is a matching and hiring platform that has over 350 million global monthly visitors. It allows you to schedule, screen, and message so that you can connect with candidates faster. And beyond just hiring faster, 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. They leverage over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, which means Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Whenever I hire somebody inside of Afford Anything, I'm doing so because we are already overloaded with work. We have way too much on our plates, and so we need to hire so that somebody can start taking some of that stuff off of our plates. But hiring itself is added workload on top of already busy workload, so it's great to have a platform like Indeed that helps you hire faster and find higher quality matches. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Paula. Just go to Indeed.com/Paula right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Paula. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. The weather is getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to t-shirts and shorts. Of course, when you go to work, you can't wear like a sloppy, well, I mean, I don't know what your dress code is at work, but you might not want to wear a sloppy t-shirt and pair of shorts. You want to be well pulled together, look good, look professional, and so Quince can provide you with a lineup of really high quality timeless pieces that are incredibly affordable. All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than many similar brands, and they're ethically made. Quince only works with factories that use ethical and responsible manufacturing processes. And what they do is that by virtue of partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and then passes those savings directly onto us. So if you're looking for professional, high quality, durable, we're not talking about fast fashion here. We're talking really, really high quality pieces, articles of clothing that are also affordable. That's what you get with Quince. I have 4 cashmere Mongolian sweaters from them. The first 2 they comped, the second 2 I bought myself. And in terms of warmer weather, they also have washable silk tops. They have European linen dresses. They have blouses and shorts starting from $30 and so much more. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/Paula for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Paula to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Paula, P-A-U-L-A.
Hi, thanks so much for being here. So many books reiterate the fundamentals. You mentioned how Die with Zero uniquely affected your perspective. Are there other books that uniquely affected your perspectives?
One of the early books that informed me that a millionaire is not necessarily what a person thinks of with the popular mythology of what is a millionaire, you know, or these days that would be a billionaire, right? But there's no billionaire next door. But The Millionaire Next Door was eye-opening in that the person next door who owns a pest control company and drives a Ford Focus could very well have a net worth of $5 million. So that was pretty influential for me early on. Atomic Habits by James Clear, I think, is a very good book in terms of habit development. Mark Manson, The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F, is a great one. The thesis of that book is essentially there are very, very few things in this world that actually merit giving an F, you know? And for those few things, we should really care. And for everything else, just don't worry about it.
The four most influential personal finance related books that I've read are Millionaire Next Door. Also, there was a book way back when by an author named David Bach called Smart Couples Finish Rich. And that was very, very tactical. And I think that book helped us in our marriage very early on more than essentially anything. So those two, Simple Path to Wealth, clearly was a total game changer. And Die with Zero is the most recent version. And yeah, I mean, I've already talked endlessly about that, but it's just understanding seasons of life. So, I mean, I think it is, you even see an evolution in those books, right? From very tactical, Smart Couples Finish Rich, to this Simple Path to Wealth of understanding finance and understanding investing and feeling confident, the beginning stages of FI, to, all right, look, there's a life when you get to FI. And that almost by definition is going to look very different than the very early days of FI. So yeah, I've never thought about it like that until this very moment. But yeah, I mean, those would be really the three or four most influential.
Thank you. Very philosophical episode so far, so I'm afraid I'm going to be a bit prosaic. Throughout both of your podcasts, the 4% rule has been discussed ad nauseum. And I was just wondering your thoughts on fixed percentage withdrawals, because to my mind, you take your 4% every year without adjusting for inflation based on your fund balance. As long as you can deal with the income volatility, you remove sequence of return risk and you mathematically at least never run out of money. Yeah. Rather than adjusting your amount for inflation, yeah, you're adjusting it for market
for
returns.
Market. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think is the easiest way of putting it. But the 4% is based on the balance at year one, correct? And then that is adjusted in line with inflation from that point forward.
Yeah. That has always been my understanding as well.
So if you were to essentially do
to make that adjustment,
yeah, yeah,
every
yeah.
Single
repeat
year.
That okay, process yeah, that makes every sense. Year. I see what he's asking. Yeah. All right.
You're seeing us work through this in real time.
Yeah, yeah. So what he's saying is you've got 500,000, you draw down 20,000 in year one.
You can't screw it up, in essence, is what you're, is the,
I guess
the
you,
subtext of this.
You're, if the market did very badly, you never run out of money, but
right.
You would get to a stage where your income was so low that it was unsustainable.
Right.
However, as long as you can handle that volatility in your income,
right,
you potentially have higher gains in the future and higher income as a consequence.
Okay, yeah, so I see what you're asking. Okay, so the original study was you draw down 20,000 in year one and then 20,000 adjusted for inflation every subsequent year, right? And so what he's proposing is you draw down based on the account balance rather than based on the 20,000 adjusted for inflation.
So it's a reset every single year.
Exactly, yeah. I don't know if that's ever been studied. Like, intuitively, it makes sense, but I haven't modeled it out on a computer screen to know what that would look like. What I do know is we interviewed Bill Bengen, who is the guy who published the original study of the 4% rule. And what he found was that it was slightly over 4%. It was 4.2%. In most scenarios, you still, even with a timeline of infinity, you still had a significant chance of not running out of money.
I guess that answers why it's not been discussed. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because my reflexive answer is, oh, I need to get big earn on this. So, I mean, I think that what you actually are getting at here is we have an incredible community. And I think this is what I actually value most about the community is like, there is no world where I have that expertise just off the top of my head. There's just simply no world. Like I could BS some answer. I'm not going to do that. But the cool part is we can model that, right? Like I can literally take this question. And I'm going to, and I'm going to email Karsten when I get back home, and we're going to play around with it. And that's wonderful. I think that's the power of community. So sorry to bring it theoretical again, which is, you know, expressly opposite of your question. But I think that is what we're doing here. We're trying to all get better. So that's something that, as you can tell from us flailing around up here trying to answer that question, we can't possibly answer that question, right? It's inconceivable that we can like model it in our heads, right? That doesn't take away from the beauty of the question. It's a wonderful question. There's no world where we can answer it, but we have experts who can help us. And I think that is the power of the FI community. And that's how I've always viewed it. It's like, I don't need to be the world-class expert at this stuff. But what I think that I do reasonably well is I package information so that people can understand it. So I can get Karsten on, and he's going to talk in his PhD language about this. And I'm going to keep asking questions and keep clarifying and simplifying so that our entire community understands a little bit better. And we might find out that this worked wonderfully, or he might just say in his very Karsten way, like, this makes no sense. Or, you know, he's going to come up with something, right? But we're going to come out with an answer at the end of it. And we're all going to come out with a little more knowledge. So I think that's how I've always viewed my role in this community is I am not the world-class expert at parsing the numbers. I don't need to be because I have friends who are. And I think that's wonderful.
Thank you.
So don't feel too bad about taking your first rental property and not finishing it. I finished it and then decided I didn't want to invest in real estate.
Excellent. Good. You know.
Yes, exactly.
You
know?
Yeah.
I'm glad I took it.
Yeah, yeah.
But my question is, you're both quite well-traveled, and my girlfriend and I are digital nomads. What are places that you've traveled to around the world that you would recommend that all of us go to?
Ooh.
That's a great
This
question.
Is a great. So first of all, I want to comment on, so I want to applaud you for taking your first rental property and then realizing through that that you don't want to invest in rentals. Rental property investing is not for everybody. And unfortunately, a lot of people figure that out the hard way. And the hard way is you buy a rental property and then 6 months later or 8 months later, you're like, this sucks. This is not for me. And so I think one of the beauties of like take a class, immerse yourself in it. And from just taking a class, really figure out, is this right for me or not? And by virtue of doing that, you spare yourself tens of thousands of dollars and huge headaches on the other side, you know, doing it the like F around and find out kind of way. Yeah.
Naked land speculation. Also not a good idea.
So, yeah, like I huge applause to you for really being thoughtful about is this for me and taking the time to dive into that question and then coming out with an informed answer. So I think that's amazing. Now to your actual question. All right. So I just came back from Mongolia, China and Egypt in the last it was a whirlwind 2 week trip. But Mongolia, so I'd been to Egypt before. It was my second time there. Egypt is great. China is great. Mongolia, I really fell in love with. It's huge. And it has a total population of, I believe, around 3 million. So it's incredibly sparsely populated. So, you know, it's nature. It's just, it's the Gobi Desert. It's these huge mountains, beautiful culture, beautiful, just beautiful scenery. Mongolia is incredible. Yeah.
So yeah, I think anybody who listens to my show knows what my answer is going to be is Japan. Mm. It's my absolute favorite place I've ever visited. It's a remarkable, remarkable place. It's a remarkable culture. The people are just incredible. And it's just such an odd mix of like, you know, you have Japanese game shows on the one hand, which are just these wild, like, things you could never imagine what these crazy people are doing, to just like the majesty of history and the grand sumo competitions and just seeing Kyoto and just all the temples. It's such a fascinating place. Even though I was such a foreigner there and I stuck out like a sore thumb, but I felt at home there. And it just was a really, really special time. So, yeah, if I were to ever live anywhere else, it would unquestionably be Japan.
Yeah. I also advocate for, you know, just go to a lot of places, but also travel slowly. At least this is my personal opinion, take it or leave it. But I'm a big proponent of what I call slow travel, where you take your time and stay there for a while. I don't count myself as having been to a country unless I've spent at least a week there. And it can be a cumulative week across, like, I went to Singapore for 3 days. And I'm going to go back again this fall because I've got a friend who just moved there. So the last time I was there for 3 days. If I'm going to go back again, I'll be there for probably like 4 days, 5 days. So, okay, cumulatively, that's a week. I'll count that. But the reason that I've implemented that rule for myself when it comes to my own personal sense of how many countries I've traveled to is I want to make sure that I'm not just like popping in, spending a day or two, leaving, and then being like, check. If I've only kind of grazed the surface of a place, then I want to give myself some type of a mental sense of that being incomplete in order to motivate myself to go back and to go back and to give it the time that it deserves. And 1 week is really even not that long, but I've set that for myself as a minimum. Yeah. We're going to take one more moment to thank the sponsors who make it possible for our team to bring you information about financial literacy and financial independence available at no cost to you. Please join me in thanking our sponsors. All right, so what are some of the next really big goals that you're saving for? Maybe you're saving for a down payment on a home. Maybe you're saving to buy your next car in cash or to at least make a pretty big down payment on your next car. Maybe you're saving for a kid's college fund or for your own college fund. Well, there's an app called Monarch that makes it easy to help you reach your financial goals. In fact, the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Paula. Monarch has a very simple, intuitive design. They have loads of built-in features that help you collaborate with your spouse or partner, with your financial advisor. You know, you can invite them to your account at no extra cost. They'll get their own login info and a joint view of all of your finances. You can customize it to look exactly like you want it to look like. You can customize the types of notifications that you get. You know, I've set mine up so that I only see the big ticket stuff. I personally don't want to see the little things. I just want to see big ticket items, so I've set up my notifications accordingly. But you can do it however you prefer. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can make it your own. And Monarch will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Paula. That's monarchmoney.com/Paula. For your extended 30-day free trial. Happy Way Day. Okay, so the Way Day sale is happening now, and today is the last day. Today, May 6th, the last day. You can get up to 80% off site-wide during Way Day. Way Day is Wayfair's biggest sale of the year. Now, if you aren't familiar with Wayfair, oh, have I got something you're going to love. Because Wayfair is the place where you can shop for everything home, from sofas to beds to dining sets, art, rugs. I just got some shelving for my bathroom. I have in my living room a daybed from them. My kitchen stools come from Wayfair. They have a great selection, super affordable, lots of variety. And right now, today is the last day of Wayday, which is their biggest sale of the year. So you can get thousands and thousands of huge deals site-wide, up to 80% off. Plus, they have 12-hour flash deals. Again, it only happens May 4 through 6. And you can find a massive selection of home goods, appliances, stuff for the patio, stuff for the deck. It could be for your home. It could be for a rental property. It could be a Mother's Day gift. It could be whatever you're looking for. Plus, get free shipping on just about everything. don't miss Wayfair's biggest sale of the year to get everything home. Head to wayfair.com now to shop Wayday for 3 days only. That's Wayfair, W-A-Y-F-A-I-R.com. Wayday ends May 6th. Visit wayfair.com/shipping for exclusions.
Hi, guys. Huge fan of both podcasts since like 2018. So it's been really fun. To piggyback on the recommendation question, we're not going to talk about travel. You both mentioned you love books, podcasts, and other content in the FIRE community. What are some of your favorites that are not based out of North America? Ooh. It could be a podcast, it could be a FIRE book, something FIRE related.
FIRE? I don't know FIRE content that's not North American based. I do know a guy who's based out of Australia who talks about dating, who's great. Yeah.
I'll take that.
Will Hitchens on Instagram. He's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that is a really good question. I do not follow any FIRE podcasts or blogs that are not in the US. I think there's also like a FI Europe or FIRE Europe podcast that I listened to a couple times, and it's good. I think it might be maybe a similar issue from what I occasionally, and I suspect this is, you know, maybe where the question comes from also, is like, get emails from people. Oh, I live in Germany. I love your podcast, but I wish you could have an episode about Germany. I'm like, yeah, it's hard. It is genuinely, I think, in fairness, we could do a better job. But am I realistically going to have a FI Germany, a FI Malaysia episode, a FI Uganda episode? Like, I think and I hope those voices come from their particular countries. And I would love to see, and I think this is why, again, with our Choose a FI local groups, we've tried, I think at last count there are 30 different countries where we have local groups, and it seems to be adding slowly but surely. I hope that those people become podcasters and bloggers, like, because they're intimately familiar, obviously, with their country. They're by definition going to do a better job than I can. So doesn't really answer your question, unfortunately, but like,
but you know, you got the essence of where it came from, because did I turn it back on? I'm originally from Cameroon, and I have family living in France, and I tell them, they know how excited I am about FIRE, but they always tell me, oh, it only works because you're in the US now. And so I'm always trying to find a way, like, okay, are they actual famous podcasters, bloggers outside that I can share with them? Yeah. So it'd be nice to have those resources.
Does anyone in the audience know? Oh, Alan and Katie Donegan. Yeah. Oh, I shouldn't have forgotten that. Yeah. Oh, Barney, the escape artist. Yeah. So definitely. Okay. So yeah, we completely forgot our friends in the UK. So sorry, guys. Alan and Katie are like some of my best friends in the whole world. And I literally forget them. I am going to Vegas with them next week, and I forgot them. That's incredible. So, yeah, you can see how hard it is to answer questions live. Yeah. Oh, no, that's going to stay.
We're keeping that in. I also wanted to add, there's this awards thing called the Plutus Awards. The Plutus Awards honors, like, best personal finance content. They have a category for best Canadian personal finance content. If you just Google Plutus Awards, you can look through every year, because they have the awards listed by year, and you can see not just the winners, but also all of the nominees. And so then you can check that for best Canadian personal finance blogs. So that's a good way, like, anytime that someone from the audience reaches out to me and says, hey, you know, what are the good Canadian personal finance blogs out there, or podcasts, or, you know, content creators, I just check the Plutus Awards website.
I just want to say that I think this is better than Swifties concerts, because this is like, I mean it. I'm geeking out big time. I've been feeling like literally high for the last several weeks since I bought the tickets, because I just saw it on your Facebook, and this is like amazing. So I love you both, and you've changed my life and so many lives in an amazing way. And I do have questions, but I wanted to be able to tell you this. You've opened like the doors into so many books and libraries and podcasts for me to get educated on things that I would have not known. I'm an immigrant. I'm from Russia. So like my family, you know, all they told me is just pay off your credit card every month. That's it. So, question for you is, I want to know what you're feeling about the real estate is. I know the market is crazy and all that stuff. I'm a cheater and he's a very slow turtle. So, so I want to buy all the houses today and tomorrow. And he keeps saying the market is best. So we have conversations, and we also have a 14-year-old daughter. What if there's any like classes that I could sign her up for with other like 14-year-olds, you know, because it's different when you like, this is amazing. Like, I'll never forget this, the energy, the everything. Like, I want her to experience that. And also for both of you, is there any like master classes or camps you are doing where people can get together and just geek out for like 3 days, like solid, in whatever way? Like FinCon, I know I haven't done it in a while, with like anything that you're planning or doing or know of.
A third question, I'll start there, because that to me is the easiest of the bunch. So there are a ton, actually, of these FI community gatherings, and which is wonderful. So I just got back from the Economy Conference in Cincinnati, which doesn't sound like a FI community event, but it is the largest FI event in the world. And it is, yeah, basically a 3-day weekend of geeking out. And you obviously, you learn a lot, and there are main stage speakers and breakout rooms, but it's the enjoyment for me, and I think for a lot of the attendees, is the time in between. It's the time to, you use the word masterclass. Yeah. And I think it's important to learn. Obviously, knowledge is wonderful. Nobody's saying otherwise, but like, for me, these events are about being amongst this energy and about seeing that you're not the only person pursuing FI. Because right in your life, there's a reasonable chance that you are the only person that you know who is pursuing FI. And you, right? Like
my
you,
friends are sick of me.
Right. Yeah. her friends are sick of her. And I think a lot of us, you can ask my friends in the back, like, you know, am I like the weird one? So I think that's normal for us. But I think when you're amidst and amongst like-minded people, it's just very energizing. So yeah, Economy. So that's ME at the end, not MY. Economy Conference. There's Camp FI. I think a lot of people get caught up in the camp as if you're like roughing it. It's a 3-day weekend basically at like a retreat center. So there's no roughing involved. There's an event that I'm going to this year in Bali, actually. So this is Amy Minkley has something called the FI Freedom Retreat. And that's obviously a much more involved event to fly across the world and stay there for a week or two. But that's much more immersive. It's akin to the Chautauquas, which don't really exist anymore, unfortunately. So, and then little events pop up, you know, something like this. The Choosify local groups hopefully are having more events on a regular basis, and not just, hey, we're getting together at a brewery, but we're going to have a case study where someone is brave enough to stand up and talk about their own personal finances and get help from the group. Because I think it really is about this community. And it's just really neat to see. I've seen like a little like green sprouts of these like case studies popping up in, I think at last check, it was a couple dozen of our local groups. Now I've had people, again, being brave enough. And could you imagine standing up, for most people, standing up in front of friends and neighbors and talking about your actual numbers? Like, that's a really scary thing. But I think what we've seen is, once you get that first person in your local group who's brave enough to do it, almost invariably, a handful of other people jump up and say, I want to do that. Because I know in our local Richmond group, we had one and it was great. And then somebody else said, okay, 3 weeks from now, I want to do a presentation. And that couple literally realized they reached financial independence and they put in their notice at their job, like from a case study. And that was just one of those really wild things. So anyway, very long story short, there are lots of these events. There really are. And I think more and more of them are popping up. I think, and somebody could correct me, there's FinTalks, I think is another one. Is it? There's a cruise, right? Amberlee Grant has a cruise. So yeah, there's like a lot of these things that are popping up. We'll try to get like a better resource on our website.
Yeah. One thing that we at Afford Anything are planning on doing, like broadly planning on doing, but we don't have specifics yet. So we're not ready to like announce it. But we're planning on having online one-day workshops for that are digital, so anybody across the nation can attend, as well as in-person events here in New York. So we don't have specifics yet, but like that's very high on our list. We also really want to do like a 1 week, you know, in the absence of Chautauqua, because both you and I have been to many of the Chautauquas and they've been great. And in the absence of that, one of the things that we've been talking about doing as Afford Anything is planning a 1 week retreat. We've been discussing doing it in Peru. Nothing is set in stone yet. That's just behind the scenes. These are the conversations that our team is having internally to see what we can do. So yeah, that the wheels are turning there.
You heard it here first. That's
yeah,
cool.
Exactly.
And you know, again, a lot of these things, I think, and I heard somebody say this earlier, I think a lot of us, especially after the you know, the horrible COVID years, we want to get out and about and we want to meet people. We want to have more of this. And I think you're seeing these, you know, these sprouts of it. So I'm actually, again, I'm going to Vegas next week with the Donegan.
With Alan Donegan.
With Alan Donegan. Yeah, sorry, Al. And we just opened this event. This was essentially a last minute plan. We're like, Alan came to me and said, do you want to do something awesome? I'm like, well, how do you say no to that, right? Like, so yes. And he had this idea for, let's do a Phi event in the least Phi place in the world, Vegas, right? So we basically just put this together. And Alan and Katie, so this is not like, you know, total fly by the seat of your pants thing. They have long experience with Chautauqua and such. So, but anyway, I mean, we put this together and within 10 days, we open it up to the public and it sold out in a day. We sold 80 tickets to this thing. And it was proof of concept. And I think we're planning on doing more of these. And we're like, oh, wouldn't Hawaii be cool? We're going to do it in Vegas again, because that's just, okay, where are there easy places for people to get to? So very long story short, I think you're going to see a lot more of these pop up because it's super energizing.
So rental property in the world of residential real estate, there is unfortunately a huge shortage of housing. And what that means is that there is market pressure for home prices to continue to rise. And that is going to be true until more housing supply is created. And we are unfortunately a very, very long way from new housing supply, in sufficient housing supply being created. And so because of the imbalance between supply and demand, we just simply do not have enough homes to meet the demand. Because of that, that is a fundamental market pressure that's going to keep home prices rising. Now, I'll asterisk this with, obviously, every market is local. And so, you know, what's true in broadly as a nationwide aggregate may not apply to, you know, Youngstown, Ohio. There are going to be isolated local pockets that have unique real estate circumstances, but speaking broadly nationwide, residential home prices are likely going to continue to rise. And so I'm very bullish on investing in properties. I think that in particular, if you can invest in properties and then increase housing supply, you know, like be part of the solution. If you can buy a single family home and turn it into a duplex, you then do two things. You, number one, contribute to the solution of increasing housing supply, because now you've taken what was once one property and you've turned it into two. And you also make more money by virtue of doing that, because now you're collecting two different incomes rather than just one, right? So the style of real estate investing that earns you the most amount of money is also the thing that actually helps solve the problem. And that comes from increasing supply, either by creating new units or by increasing density, by increasing the number of bedrooms per unit, right? So if you can do either of those two things, that in particular is good for you and good for the market in general.
Yeah. Cheetah all the way.
All right. Let's make this the last question.
I got a
question.
Quick one.
Yeah.
Rental properties are great, in our opinion. And then there's the market. What do you or anybody in the room have for ideas of other ways to invest money?
Oh, so many. One thing that I think we don't talk about enough is making money through the ownership of businesses. And that can either come from starting a business yourself, which is typically done by starting a side hustle and then growing it on the side until it has, you know, enough momentum that you can quit your job and do it full time, very much like we did, you know. So either by starting a business or by buying a business. And I don't think that we talk about the buying a business portion of it enough. There's a lot of opportunity there, but the ownership of private businesses, whether it's one that you have created or whether it's one that you've purchased, is a huge opportunity. And in particular, purchasing businesses, right now and over the span of the next decade, as you know, there's going to be a huge number of baby boomers who are retiring. This is a trend that's already begun. And as baby boomers retire, a lot of them are small business owners who they need a successor, and their children don't necessarily want to take over the family business. I mean, you know, it, logically, just because you have an HVAC company doesn't necessarily mean that your kids have a dream of running that HVAC company, right? So if you're a small business owner, your kids don't want the business, well, you have to sell it if you ever want to retire. And so there's going to be and this is already starting, a lot of small businesses that are coming on the market that are very like healthy, long-term viable businesses that the owners just want to exit out of because they're 60 or they're 65 and it's time to do something different.
Yeah, it's funny. I literally just got a pitch from somebody about this. It was they use an acronym I'd never heard of. So ETA, so entrepreneurship through acquisition. And I'm sure both of us get hundreds of these random people sending us emails all the time, but something about that one just really stuck out to me. So that's an episode we're going to have in the future. I think that's really, really interesting. Another person, Cody Sanchez, you've had her on,
yeah.
Right?
She hasn't been on yet.
Oh, she hasn't been on. Okay. She's another person to follow in that sphere. I found her especially interesting. You can find her if you just Google Cody Sanchez podcast. You can listen to a number of episodes. She's been on, you know, various podcasts.
I asked this of Joe Saul-Sehy a couple of years ago at the book signing, and I'm actually curious of Paula's answer first. So if you would answer second, as a board gamer.
I'm fine not answering.
This is a board game question, so nothing too hard. You're kickstarting tomorrow your dream board game you've been working on. Wow. What type of mechanics is it? What's the theme? What's it like?
Ooh, wow. Okay. A dream board game. The first thing that's popping into my head is like some combination of Clue with Chutes and Ladders. I'm just brainstorming out loud here. If I were to come up with a board game, of course it would have to have some type of money related lesson. There are two board games that I know of that teach about money. One was created by Robert Kiyosaki. It's Cash Flow. Yeah, the Rat Race one, yeah. The other is Franklin's Folly?
Yeah.
Franklin's Folly. So the reason that Clue comes to mind is that I like the structure of assembling a little bit of a whodunit. And I would somehow try to find a way to create like a murder mystery whodunit sort of a theme into finance concepts. I don't know exactly how that would happen. But that would be like the ultimate board game.
Like who killed somebody over the will or something? Like
yeah.
That.
Right? I can see this actually turning into an escape room. You know what? This would be maybe better as an escape room than it would be as a board game. You know?
Like yeah, I like that a lot. So,
oh, and you have to solve personal finance questions to find the clues to get out of the escape room. Yeah.
The total market just went down. Total adjustable market. So we're a big board game family. Our favorite mechanism, I guess, is deck building. So Dominion is our all-time favorite. Dominion is also the game that ruined board games for us. Actually, like we wound up, so we probably played this at the beginning of the pandemic, maybe 1,000 times, like not hyperbole, probably 1,000 times. And we, the four of us, loved it. And then we made the cardinal sin of playing online, and we actually learned like how deep the strategy went. And it was like, once you've seen it, you can't unsee it, essentially. So it more or less ruined board gaming for us. But that said, this would still be my choice. I would come up with, I have not been able to find another deck building game on par with Dominion. So maybe we could talk afterwards if you have any options. So yeah, I don't have any like cute answer of personal finance or not, but I would love to build a deck building game that has the replayability of Dominion, but doesn't ruin board gaming for us forever.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you for coming to episode 500. I hope you enjoyed this live audience Q&A featuring special guest Brad Barrett from the Choose FI podcast, as well as myself, recorded live on stage in Brooklyn in celebration of episode 500. So what you've just heard is part two of episode 500. I want to thank everyone who has been part of this community, whether you've been listening for 8 years or whether you've been listening for 8 days or any amount of time in between. I want to thank everyone who is part of this Afford Anything community and who's part of the Choose FI community, because this community broadly, this community of people who are interested in financial literacy, financial independence, in a devotion to the pursuit of healthy personal finance habits. This is a lifetime practice. And this type of lifestyle is made more fun with friends. And these digital communities, these online spaces are how we form the connections that keep us motivated. Whether we're trying to earn more or spend less or invest more wisely, these are pursuits that are best done with the camaraderie and support of others. So a big thanks to all of you. In fact, Steve, can I get a round of applause for you who are listening right now? I want all of you who are part of this community to be really, really proud of yourself for being proactive about bettering your life, for not accepting the default, for not accepting the status quo, and for being thoughtful about focusing on what matters most to you, whatever you choose that to be, because it is your choice. The way that you spend your money, your time, your focus, your energy, this is your choice. And this show exists to empower you to make conscious, deliberate choices. If you've gotten value from listening to the Afford Anything podcast, there are a few ways that you could help support this show. Number one, please open your favorite podcast playing app, Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and leave us a review. These reviews are instrumental in helping us spread the message of good financial health. Number two, please follow us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and on YouTube. If you haven't seen our YouTube channel yet, we're there at youtube.com/affordanything. Please follow us there. Please watch some of our videos. Share it with your friends. And finally, please subscribe to the show notes, which are available at no cost to you. You can find the show notes at affordanything.com/show notes. Once you've subscribed, please hit reply to absolutely any of the show notes that you receive and tell us what you'd like to hear more of on this show. What topics do you want us to cover? Remember, if you want to talk to other members of this community, you can find one another and form common connection at affordanything.com/community, all completely no cost. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Paula Pant. This is the Afford Anything podcast, and I'll meet you in the next episode.